Hello, everyone, and a very happy Wednesday. Carrie, I'm happy to see that you are in the sanctuary. Of course, we heard that you were admitted to a hospital in Philadelphia. So I don't know if you're still in the hospital right now, just kind of listening in, but it's good to see you. And Sharon, thank you very much for coming in and sharing your experience. Of course, that was a rerun for me. I got to hear it this morning when Sharon called. But I told her that it's really good to share from a shift because that helps to stabilize the shift. And so she chose to come in and share. So thank you very much, Sharon. What I'm going to do is play a song, and then we will start looking at the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. So this song is by Natalie Grant. It's from her Awaken album. And the name of the song is You Move Me.
And your love has colored
Right. So today, we are going to begin the second section of the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. This section is called Spiritual Instruction. And the first question is, what are the marks of a real teacher? And Ramana Maharshi's answer is, steady abidance in the self, looking at all with an equal eye, unshakable courage at all times, in all places and circumstances, etc. and that's, those are qualities that not everyone who is teaching now, spiritual teaching now, they don't all meet up to that. You know, I have met several spiritual teachers and gotten to know them personally. And, you know, you get to see another side to them, and it can be disappointing. I heard Craig Holiday say the same thing when he was teaching on Sunday night this week. So, what do we do with this? You know, what do we do with this information? What is the mark of a real teacher? And that it's, you know, the answer being steady abidance in the self, looking at all with equal eye, unshakable courage at all times, in all places and circumstances. When many of the spiritual teachers out there don't meet that requirement, and I'm sure there are some who do. I am sure there are some who do. But it's very difficult unless you live with a teacher or get to know them very, very well on a personal basis. It's very difficult to know which ones meet this requirement and which ones don't. So, when I have contemplated this in the past, what I have come to is that there is one teacher who meets this requirement. And I have access to this one teacher. I've always had access to this one teacher. And so when all else fails, I trust this teacher. And that's the inner teacher. I have never once gone to the inner teacher and received, for example, a fear message. I've never once gone to the inner teacher and received a judgment message. The inner teacher is always absolutely clear on the truth, and I have never once, never once, found the inner teacher to be confused about truth. I've never once found the inner teacher to, you know, for a moment forget. Now, of course, as I say this, I do know that not everyone has clarity on what is their inner teacher and what is their ego. And so in order to know that high consistency that is within, one thing that needs to happen is that discernment. That discernment needs to come. And if we trust the teachings of Michael Langford, which I do, what causes that discernment to come is the, as he words it, extremely intense desire for liberation. My experience is when I don't know, it's hard to say when I first started the spiritual path because there were kind of many little false starts, but probably the really first, really strong foot, you know, just put right square on the path, was when I was about 30 years old. And I don't remember exactly what led up to this, But I just became highly motivated to know what the truth is, the spiritual truth, to know what the truth is. And I remain highly motivated to know what the truth is since that day. And so I think that motivation, that inner motivation, just wants to know what's true. And in fact, when I said that very first prayer, when I was around 30 years old, maybe 29, but you know, around there, when I said that very first prayer, what I prayed was, you know, please, I think I said, let me see the truth. I might have said, let me know the truth. Please let me see the truth. And then I said, I don't care what it is. In other words, there were no conditions. The truth did not have to meet any conditions for me. I simply wanted to know what the truth is. And it's funny because as I've gotten to know the ego better, the ego actually has a story that, you know, maybe you get to hear from time to time. And the gist of the ego's story is there is no truth. There's no such thing as truth. This will often be experienced as doubt. But I've really looked at that idea that the ego has, that there is no truth. There's no such thing as truth. And I thought that cannot be true. There has to be a truth. Now, the truth doesn't have to be a specific thing, right? You know, for example, you know, if I believe that one day the world, in my experience, will disappear, and I will not see a world again, you know, that doesn't have to be the truth. That's a specific point of view, a specific belief. And maybe that is the truth. But what I'm saying is the truth doesn't have to be a specific thing. You know, like the truth doesn't have to be that, you know, Jesus Christ is my Savior. Or the truth doesn't have to be, you know, name any other thing you can name. But there has to be a truth. Something has to be the truth. There can't be no truth. That's impossible. So as I sought out to find out what truth is without putting any conditions on it, without saying it has to be a certain thing, this is what I feel brought me into contact with my inner guide, and this is what also brought me the discernment to know the difference between the ego and the inner guide. And because I know the difference between the ego and the inner guide, this is why I can say with complete faith that the inner guide always abides in the self. It's never confused about what is true. You know, the inner guide never speaks from fear or encourages fear. The inner guide never speaks from judgment or encourages judgment. And in fact, I remember when I first discovered this inner guide and first started, you know, having conversations with it, I even asked it because I was very new. And I asked it, how will I know it's you? How will I know, you know, that I'm listening to you and not the ego on accident? And the inner guide's answer was, you will know me by my consistency. You will know me by my consistency. And I have found that to be true. And because I've gotten to know the inner guide so well, and I know that we actually all have the same inner guide, you know, we may call it by different names, but there's only one inner guide. It's also very easy for me when I'm listening to others, I can hear whether they're listening to the inner guide or the ego, right? I can hear it. And one thing I really love in the Guiding Light is the Gentle Healing Group, is that sometimes when people are sharing in that first 45 minutes, sometimes they share a question they asked and an answer they wrote. And so far, every time I've heard someone sharing, they have shared from the inner guide. They're sharing from that consistency. I haven't heard anyone share from the ego yet. I love that. I love that. I love that. And so it's all about learning to get to know that better. Then we have our teacher, the real teacher, right? The question is, what are the marks of a real teacher? And that teacher is 100% consistent all of the time, which isn't necessarily true with the teachers that are in human form. However, when they speak from that teacher, right, they're speaking from that consistency. Right? We see that one teacher coming through many bodies. But to point at a particular human and say, that human is my teacher, there may be times when that human is not demonstrating from that consistency. And we don't want to make a human our teacher. We want to make that consistency our teacher. The next question, what are the marks of an earnest disciple? The answer, an intense longing for the removal of sorrow and attainment of joy, and an intense aversion for all kinds of mundane pleasure. Now that sounds like Michael Langford, doesn't it? Right? Remember Michael Langford says, an intense desire for liberation. Here it's an intense longing for the removal of sorrow and attainment of joy, right? And Michael Langford talks about, letting go of all of your distractions, all of your unnecessary activities, and spending, as much time as you can in awareness, watching, awareness, meditation, or now he says awareness, watching, awareness, meditation, or, reading things that inspire you to awareness, watching, awareness, meditation, right? But let go of all of your unnecessary activities and spend as much time in this pursuit. And notice Ramana Maharshi says, an intense aversion for all kinds of mundane pleasure, right? Different way of saying the same thing. What are the marks of an earnest disciple? An intense longing for the removal of sorrow and attainment of joy, and an intense aversion for all kinds of mundane pleasure. And I think it is fair to say a teaching or a teacher is only as good as the disciple. And we each have the opportunity to choose to be that earnest disciple. I'm one who always feels, without any kind of judgment or guilt, I'm one who always feels there's room for improvement in my discipleship. when I first started this spiritual path, I think I used to spend about an hour a day, an hour in the morning, in focused contemplation. And now that's closer to 4 hours. And now, just a few weeks ago, I've made a commitment, a new commitment, to spend 4 days a month, all day, in contemplation, in addition to the daily 4 hours. And in fact, by coincidence, this morning, I actually sat down and marked out the time in my calendar. And the funny thing is, because my calendar is already booked through the end of the year, I wasn't able to fully do that. I took any time I could find. Like, there were some Fridays that weren't booked yet, and I marked those Fridays out as days of self-inquiry. But what I want to do is take a Thursday and a Friday together every other week. So 2 days of turning off my phone, not turning on email, ignoring the world, and practicing self-inquiry for 2 days every other week. And I couldn't actually do that until, actually it was February, because my calendar is already full. So, oh boy, I better get those in there. So starting in February, when I finally could do it, I've put it in my calendar and I've put it in as a repeating appointment from February onward, every other Thursday and Friday. I called it a personal self-inquiry retreat, and they are now in my calendar. And now I can work everything else around. But that's how busy life is. I couldn't even find that time. And we're sitting here in October, and February was the first time I could really start that in a consistent manner. Of course, we have the holidays in between now and then. Jasmine's home from college, going to visit my mom. There were a lot of things going on besides just work. But I always feel that there's the opportunity to improve myself as the disciple, to improve my discipleship. And I really feel that continuing that improvement until I am nothing but a disciple, nothing but, is the way to go. So what are the marks of an earnest disciple? An intense longing for the removal of sorrow and attainment of joy, and an intense aversion for all kinds of mundane pleasure. What are the characteristics of instruction? There's a Sanskrit word here, which I don't know. I'll look it up in the back for you. But the Sanskrit word is upadesa. I don't even know if I'm saying it right. Upadesa. So let me look that up. Oh, I'm noticing it's funny because I know Carrie looked up aversion. And now I'm about to look up a word. And just as I'm about to look up a word, he types, it's a good idea to look up the meaning of a word if unsure when heard or read. And I agree with you 100% on that, Carrie. So upadesa, let me see what this means. This is, of course, a Sanskrit word. And by the way, we'll probably be looking up lots of Sanskrit words as we go through this book. But often when I look up the Sanskrit word, I'm a little disappointed because it kind of means the same thing as the English word that was also just recently used. Here it means instruction. Instruction. So maybe another word is teaching. We'll find out the true meaning of this as we go forward and read the answer. We'll figure it out from the context. So the question is, what are the characteristics of instruction? And then the answer says, the word upadesa, which we now means instruction, the word instruction, the word upadesa means near the place or seat. I love that. The word upadesa, or the word instruction, means near the place or seat. The guru, who is the embodiment of that which is indicated by the terms existence, consciousness, bliss, prevents the disciple who, on account of his acceptance of the forms of the objects of the senses, has swerved from his true state and is consequently distressed and buffeted by joys and sorrows, from continuing so, and establishes him in his own real nature without differentiation. Upadesa also means showing a distant object quite near. It is brought home to the disciple that Brahman, which he believes to be distant and different from himself, is near and not different from himself. All right, so after reading that, this is what I get out of that. instruction or upadesa, well, for me, it means practicing awareness, watching awareness. I mean, let's listen to this very carefully. The word upadesa means near the place or seat. Now, of course, you can think about a physical guru, because he goes on to say the guru is who is the embodiment of that which is indicated by the terms existence, consciousness, and bliss. So you can listen to this and you can hear, oh, I have to get near a guru. You know, somehow I have to get Michael Langford to come out of his, reclusiveness. I have to get Michael Langford to come out of his reclusiveness so I can sit at his feet, or I have to go sit at the feet of Muji, or I have to find another physical being who is the embodiment of existence, consciousness, bliss, and sit at their feet. I mean, you can read it this way, but it sounds to me, it feels to me, that if I choose to read this way, this is going to put me on an external search, for that guru, and my attention is going to be focused outward. And I honestly don't see how that outward seeking, I got to find the right person, the one who won't disappoint me when I get to know them too well. It sounds like, you know, we could waste lifetimes doing that. It really does. Like I said, every teacher I've gotten to know well on a personal basis, I have seen what Craig Holiday called the other night their shadow side. Sometimes the shadows are quite dark. Unfortunately. I'm sorry, but it's true. Sometimes. Not all teachers. But there are some. And, you know, again, Craig Holiday said the same thing. So are we going to go out there and spend all of our time trying to find that perfect teacher so we can sit at their feet and then hopefully they can pull us into existence, consciousness, bliss? Or are we going to read this answer differently? I'm going to read this answer differently. Because if I read it differently, it gives me the opportunity now. I don't have to go out there and find someone. It gives me the opportunity now, right here in this office that I'm in, was originally put together, I think, a couple years ago. This used to be Danielle's bedroom when she lived with me. And I never had an office. My desk was out like in the middle of a common area. I never had a private space, even in my own house. I've never had one. And when Danielle moved out, I claimed her ex-bedroom as what I call my office. And we went and we bought furniture and all that. And one piece of furniture is this wonderful purple sofa, which is where I like to sit and meditate and contemplate. And in fact, if you saw my house, I could, even if I wanted to, really go on a retreat down here, you know, with the permission of the rest of my family, because there's a bedroom, a bathroom, and my office, and you can close doors, and they're literally sealed off from the rest of the house. You know, give me a little refrigerator, a coffee maker, and a microwave, and I could stay down here and be separate from other people for the purpose of retreat and not even have to interact with people in my own house. It's kind of like a cave. It's like my own little cave. And so if I read this answer the way I'm going to interpret it in just a moment, if I read this answer, I already have everything I need. Except, you know, clearing out those days on the calendar, which I actually did this morning. So that I can spend long periods of time sitting near the place or the seat, sitting right here in my office with my phone off and my computer off, in awareness, watching awareness, meditation. I mean, what better definition is there for near the place or seat than awareness, watching awareness, meditation? How much closer can I get? And then the inner guru, the awareness itself, which is Sat Chit Ananda, which is existence, consciousness, bliss. It can hold me, hold my attention within itself. I can be locked on it, and it can embrace me. And I think, at least in the foreseeable future, for the year 2018, beginning in February, I can do that for 4 days a month. Turn off everything, ignore everyone, pretend like I went away. I actually wanted to buy a house. I wanted to physically go away. I found a little house in La Vida that I wanted to buy. But my boyfriend said, I don't think you would actually do it. And I thought, well, then I'm just going to do it here. It feels a little more challenging to turn everything off here, you know, because you know, sometimes he'll be right upstairs. I will have to walk Jamie. Yeah. Yeah, see, if I'm here, I will have to walk Jamie. That's one thing I'll have to do. And it's easier to tell other people I'm not available when I physically leave. You know what I mean? It's easier to tell other people I'm not available when I physically leave. But I'll just have to train everyone. I'll just have to train everyone that wants my attention that you can't have my attention on these days. Pretend like I physically left. So for now, I'm not buying that little house in La Vida. It was a tiny house, like 600 square feet, tiny little house, like a meditation hut. And I wasn't going to have internet there or anything, just, you know, electric and heat. Boom, that's it. But I'll try it here. Part of it will be my discipline. And part of it will be training all of you all. You know, I'll put on my out of office, right? I put my phone on airplane mode and do it right here. And I will walk Jamie. I will have to do that. And the reason I'll have to do that is if I don't, you know, there will come a point in the day where she actually would become the interruption, right? She'd start crying. She'd start pawing at me. And it probably won't hurt to get up and take a walk anyway, as long as you hold to the contemplation while you're walking. I think that, you know, there comes a point where I think the meditation can become dull, and then to get up and walk is to revive, and then to come back, right? So I don't think walking is a big deal. It's more a bigger deal convincing everybody else that even though I'm here, I'm not here, right? Because everybody always thinks they're the exception to that, right? They understand that applies to everybody else, but you know, as for me, what I have is really important. Can you do just this one thing today? And pretty soon I have 21 things to do. So part of it will be my discipline, and part of it will just be asking others to, yes, cooperate with me. Pretend like I went away. So that's instruction. Right? That's instruction. Instruction is being near the place or seat, allowing the guru to hold you in existence, consciousness, bliss, and giving the guru enough opportunity to hold you there so that it gets to the point where you no longer swerve from this true state, but that you become established in your own real nature. By the way, if anybody else thinks they can block out 2 days every other week on their calendar, and if you would like to do it on the same days that I do it, email me and I'm happy to share that information with you. Even though we'll be in our separate locations, we could be on retreat at the same time. So if anybody else feels they could do that and would like to do that, I am very happy to share the dates that I have marked out. Like I said, they don't start until February, so there's time to prepare yourself. Although I have some half days that I've blocked out between now and then, and a couple of full days like I said, just because of circumstances, I wasn't able to get into the groove of it until February. The next question. If it be true that the guru is one's own self, what is the principle underlying the doctrine which says that however learned a disciple may be, or whatever occult powers he may possess, he cannot attain self-realization without the grace of the guru? So that's a good question. If it's true that the guru is your own self, why do you need a guru? That's basically the question that is being asked here. And this is Ramana Maharshi's answer. Although in absolute truth, the state of the guru is that of oneself. It's funnily, my phone's ringing right now, but I have to take this. Y'all can listen in. Hello? Hi, I'm teaching right now, so. That's okay. I answered because I didn't know if you had flight information for me.
No, I don't know. Everything's going on with this folks. I didn't realize you were teaching.
Okay.
I'll try you to flight or I'll see when I get there.
All right. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
That was Jacqueline. And the reason I answered is I'm picking her up at the airport today. So I didn't know if she was calling to tell me about delays. Usually I totally ignore the phone when I'm teaching. But, you know, last time she came, there were delays and she called to tell me. So there are delays. I thought I'd want to know about that. All right, so let's go back to the question again. The question, if it be true that the guru is one's own self, what is the principle underlying the doctrine which says that however learned a disciple may be or whatever occult powers he may possess, he cannot attain self-realization without the grace of the guru? Here's the answer. Although in absolute truth the state of the guru is that of oneself, it is very hard for the self, which has become the individual soul through ignorance, to realize its true state or nature without the grace of the guru. All mental concepts are controlled by the mere presence of the real guru. If he were to say to one who arrogantly claims that he has seen the further shore of the ocean of learning, or one who claims arrogantly that he can perform deeds which are well nigh impossible, yes, you learned all that is to be learned, but have you learned to know yourself? And you who are capable of performing deeds which are almost impossible, have you seen yourself? They will bow their heads in shame and remain silent. Thus it is evident that only by the grace of the guru and by no other accomplishment is it possible to know one's self. So the question again, we need to go back to the question in order to fully understand the answer. The question was, is it true that no matter how learned you are, how educated you are on spiritual principles, and is it true also that no matter what kind of special powers you've acquired, that you still need the grace of the guru to awaken? And Ramana Maharshi says, yes, you need the grace of a guru. And again, we could hear that as, we have to go out there and find that perfect person. But that's not how I hear it. What I hear is, it doesn't matter how many books I read. It doesn't matter if I can quote A Course in Miracles or any other spiritual teaching. I need to sit in awareness, watching awareness. I need to be in the presence of the guru. That's the grace that I need. I need to be in the presence. I cannot learn my way into awakening. Also, it doesn't matter if I have the power to heal, or if I have the power to see the future, or any other type of occult power. Those powers are not awakening. Only knowing myself, is awakening. Only knowing what I am is awakening. And so the grace of the guru, again, doesn't need to be the grace of this perfect physical being. The grace of the guru is that grace that I receive when I set aside that time, genuinely set aside that time, and set in the presence of awareness. Because in that way, I come to know myself. And knowing myself as myself is awakening. So I'll just read that answer again. First, the question. If it be true that the guru is one's own self, what is the principle underlying the doctrine which says that however learned a disciple may be, or whatever occult powers he may possess, he cannot attain self-realization without the grace of the guru? And Ramana Maharshi says, although in absolute truth the state of the guru is that of oneself, it is very hard for the self, which has become the individual soul through ignorance, to realize its true state or nature without the grace of the guru. So what I hear in that, again, is it's very hard for those of us who remain outward focused all of the time to know who we are. Right? If we remain outward focused all the time, it's going to be very, very hard. We need to take that time to be inward focused. We need to be looking in the direction of ourself to know ourself. Although in absolute truth, the state of the guru is that of oneself, it is very hard for the self, which has become the individual soul through ignorance, to realize its true state or nature without the grace of the guru. All mental concepts are controlled by the mere presence of the real guru. So what this means to me is, of course, when we get into awareness, watching, awareness, meditation, when we really get into it, right? When we really get into it, the thoughts slow down and eventually disappear completely. Right? When we really get into it, this is what happens. So all mental concepts are controlled by the mere presence of the real guru, awareness. If the guru were to say to one who arrogantly claims that he has seen the further shore of the ocean of learning, do you hear that word? If the guru were to say to one who arrogantly claims that he has seen the further shore of the ocean of learning, yes, you learned all that there is to be learned, but have you learned to know yourself? They will bow their head in shame and remain silent, because all of that learning did not teach them who they are. If the guru were to say to one who claims arrogantly that he can perform deeds which are nigh impossible, yes, and you who are capable of performing deeds which are almost impossible, have you seen yourself? He would also bow his head in shame and remain silent, because learning and special powers are not self-realization. Thus, it is evident that only by the grace of the guru and by no other accomplishment is it possible to know oneself. And again, the grace of the guru awareness. In order to experience the grace of the guru, we need to go and set at the feet of the guru, awareness, watching, awareness. Question number 5. What are the marks of the guru's grace? The answer, it is beyond words or thoughts. So the only way that we can discover the answer to this question is to go into awareness, watching awareness, and discover it directly. Right? The answer tells us nothing. What are the marks of the guru's grace? It is beyond words or thoughts. And many times Ramana Maharshi told people, find out for yourself, right? If you were to read that big book called Talks with Ramana Maharshi, you're going to see that over and over again in that big book. Find out for yourself. I totally agree. How else are we going to find out? Otherwise, we're just gathering intellectual information. Find out for yourself. What are the marks of the guru's grace? It is beyond words or thought. Number 6, if that is so, how is it that it is said that the disciple realizes his true state by the guru's grace? The answer, it is like the elephant which wakes up on seeing a lion in its dream. Even as the elephant wakes up at the mere sight of the lion, so too is it certain that the disciple wakes up from the sleep of ignorance into the wakefulness of true knowledge through the guru's benevolent look of grace. And you know, I think it would have been really sweet, really, really, really sweet to have been able to sit at the feet of Ramana Maharshi and to receive his benevolent look of grace. And anyone who has the devotion of Ramana Maharshi in the heart, I'm sure feels the same thing. Like, oh, you know, that would be magnificent. But Ramana Maharshi is not here in physical form. And again, to run around looking for another teacher and hoping for that benevolent look of grace, that eye-to-eye contact that's going to send us flying into self-realization, it just feels like a waste of time to me. Unless we are certainly called to one. You know, like I remember Robert Adams' story when he was a small child still in a crib. You know, a little man showed up and played with him in his crib. And as things began to unfold, you know, like he had this huge mystical experience when he was in school, taking a math test, I think. And then he went to Yogananda. I can't remember his last name. We'll just say Yogananda, the one in San Diego. You know, hoping that Yogananda would be his guru, right? And Yogananda said, go to Ramana Maharshi, he's your guru. And so he went to Ramana Maharshi, and there he was, the little man who had played with him in his crib, right? He had seen visions of this man since he was a child. So that's pretty distinct. He didn't really have to run around all over the world looking for the guru. He kind of had a, you know, he was led to him, kind of, right? But if we aren't led like that, to a specific teacher, to run around looking for that teacher feels like a waste of time to me. The look of grace of the guru, to me, can be that being in awareness. I mean, when you are in awareness and the thoughts have stopped, and it's just awareness watching awareness, isn't that the benevolent glance of the guru? And I love what it says. I mean, imagine this for a moment. You know, you're in awareness, watching awareness. There are no thoughts. There's just this knowing of what you are. It's just you. In all of your reality. That's enough to wake you up. You know, just like the elephant wakes up at the mere sight of the lion. You wake up at the mere sight of yourself without the illusion, without the confusing thoughts and emotions and images, without anything to hide the truth. That's Shiloh. I'm babysitting. She barks at every little noise. Now Jamie's going to go join her because once Shiloh starts barking, Jamie has to go find out what it is. Now her bark is louder. Let me, you guys just wait one moment. I have a way of quieting them. I think maybe they'll quiet on their own. Once the two of them start together, it just goes on and on. Unless I open the door and show them there's nothing there, that Shiloh is imagining things. Because Shiloh, I mean, it could be, you know, houses just pop sometimes. It could be anything like that, and Shiloh will start barking. But I think Jamie's decided to settle down. She decides it's not worth it, so we're good. We're good. I don't need to go open the door. All right, so number 7. What is the significance of the saying that the nature of the real guru is that of the Supreme Lord? What is the significance of the saying that the nature of the real guru is that of the Supreme Lord? Here's the answer. In the case of the individual soul, which desires to attain the state of true knowledge or the state of godhood, and with that object always practices devotion, the Lord, who is the witness of that individual soul and identical with it, comes forth when the individual's devotion has reached a mature stage in human form with the help of Sat-Chit-Ananda. His three natural features and form and name, which he also graciously assumes, and in the guise of blessing, the disciple absorbs him in himself. According to this doctrine, the guru can truly be called the Lord. And it's funny because from my very first reading of this book, what I have written in the margin after this answer is God takes the final step, which of course is language from A Course in Miracles. But the question, I think the question is, because again, this person that's asking these questions is still thinking of the guru as a physical being, and in fact is with Ramana Maharshi, which is a physical being at this time, right? And really, I think the question is very similar to a question I heard Muji answer this morning, which is how can, you know, a physical being be the Lord? And in fact, the question as it was put to Muji was you know, basically the person was even saying, this is sickening. This is sickening how people treat you as the Lord. You know, you're a mere man. And when I heard that question, it really reminded me of in the Bible when Jesus was somewhere, I think he was at dinner at someone's house, and a woman ran in, and this woman had experienced some kind of healing or awakening through Jesus, and she was just so grateful. And she ran in, and remember, she began to anoint him with an expensive oil. She began to anoint his feet and anoint his hair, and she was crying. And the observers there felt the same thing. You know, this was sickening to them that Jesus would permit her to treat him in this way. She was treating him like he was the Lord, and he was a mere man. And so as I listened this morning, to the same question, and I listened to Muji's answer, although I don't remember Muji's words exactly now. I heard Muji answering in the same way that I remember Jesus answering in the Bible. And the answer was, I'm not going to stand in the way of her gratitude. I'm not going to stand in the way of their devotion. It's like if you understood where the gratitude was coming from, if you understood where the devotion was coming from, if you understood the joy of an awakening, you wouldn't be saying what you're saying. You couldn't see this as something sickening. You couldn't see this as something wrong. And I am going to allow their devotion or allow her gratitude. I am not going to get in the way of this precious moment for that being. So I feel like this person's question is kind of coming from the same place. What is the significance of the saying that the nature of the real guru is that of the Supreme Lord? You know, how can a person be the Lord? And so Ramana answers that question by saying, first of all, if you have an individual soul that really wants to attain the state of true knowledge, that this is their intense desire, and they practice devotion based on this desire, and maybe it appears that the object of their devotion is a guru, a physical guru, but what they're really devoted to is their desire. What they're really devoted to is their wanting of the truth. And if they are devoted to their wanting of the truth, they will at some point be swallowed up by their wanting of the truth, right? When that individual's devotion has reached a mature stage, and remember, Elie Ruzdar told us that a maturity was the ability to recognize the truth when you see it. The people who are not mature will have experiences of truth, but they kind of expect the truth to be something else, an experience, bells and whistles, you know, light, something. They don't recognize the witness as the truth. And so they may come face to face with it, but they don't claim it because they're expecting an experience. They're expecting something different. But when this devotion for true knowledge reaches a state of maturity, then the witness of that individual soul and identical with it comes forth. And absorbs him in himself. Or as I wrote in the margin, God takes the final step. And if this happens to occur with a physical guru, you know, in the presence of a physical guru, like you, that guru was the object of your devotion when you were, you know, being devoted, well, then that guru can truly be called the Lord. That inner awareness can also truly, truly, truly be called the Lord. And with that, we are complete for today. But I think that we are finding out that really what we need is just to have that devotion ourselves that leads us to really want to go and spend time with awareness. And if we do, everything else will take care of itself. And that is the spiritual instruction. All right, I'm releasing the mic. Bye.